Thank you, Dieter. The theme of this session. The theme of this session is, do jobs build cities or do cities build jobs? Now, this is in some ways a silly question because obviously both are true. And they're very much true in terms of New York. In New York, the project orientation of its core industries has particular implications for the spaces of the city. And I hope to describe this in terms of both the public spaces, which have been referred to, and quasi-public or liminal spaces. Project-based work creates a particular kind of city and a particular kind of urban energy, but also a fragmented and, as we've heard, a contentious city composed of villages and districts. However, I think on the positive side, this, what we might call complex urbanity, draws the world to New York, creating another layer of jobs in retail and tourism. So the city also builds jobs. Now, New York is perhaps the most overstudied city in the world, and it's a little presumptuous to try to draw some generalizations about it, but that's my portfolio here. There are many people in the audience whose work I'm drawing on, in particular Susan Feinstein, Bob Beauregard, and Peter Marcuse. But I think what I'm going to try to do in this short presentation is to pull together some of the key dynamics and their spatial implications in a way that captures both the distinctiveness of New York and allows us to compare work and space with the other cities that will be examined in the Urban Age project. Now, to begin with, we'll have a historic reference point here, which I've been surprised has not been noted, and that is that New York is the historical financial information center of the U.S., and its labor force reflects that preeminent role and New York's initial advantage as an information center, both nationally and globally. The jobs we see as central to New York today are the inheritors of that historic role as the preeminent merchant city. And in this respect, New York has very much in common with London. Information, creative industry, and financial services jobs have made New York the quintessential knowledge economy. As a highly generative urban center, it's defined spatially by the need for interaction among people employed in project-oriented work, people with diverse skills and experience who come together around a work project and then disperse, only to meet up again to work on another project in media, information making, in financial deals, in legal contracts. The core workforce in New York is really a project-oriented workforce. Significantly for New York's character, much of this work in these projects is carried out in public, on the street, or in liminal public-private spaces, such as hotel lobbies and cafes. Projects are being hatched in the lobby of this meeting space. That's a liminal space, neither public nor private. The implication of this is that the quality of public space, its safety, visual interest, and accessibility are interwoven with the practice of creative work and with the economy of the city. And I think that's going to be talked about in more detail tomorrow. Now, this dependence on a knowledge economy and a creative, flexible workforce has become even more important in the last 20 years. New York, as has been described, has lost some of its sectoral strengths in manufacturing And it is employed, employment is has become less diverse when we look at it by industry. By comparison with Los Angeles or Chicago, for example, New Yorkers are employed in a small number of industries. New York has lost employment even in its signature manufacturing industries, apparel and printing and publishing. This is, I think, very important to note, too. Job growth in the finance, insurance, and real estate sectors stagnated between 1990 and 2000. The securities industry expanded by almost 250% in the region, but less than 1% in the five boroughs. Now, at the same time, the New York workforce has become more flexible, if we think about this in terms of multi-skilled and being able to move from project to project and job to job, with a growth in knowledge-oriented firms and a significantly higher level of self-employment than in the U.S. as a whole. If you see that top graph to the left, the top line is New York self-employment, and the second line is the U.S. So New York is moving in a direction of self-employment, and this is also reflected in the fact that the temporary help industry is the second fastest growing industry in terms of employment in New York. So New York is also characterized by employers' ability to use on-demand workforce. So the consequence of this is that New York is more than ever dependent on the skills, energy, and inventiveness of its workforce, and on their desire to work and live in the city because of its cultural and economic environment. For these project-oriented workers, the city is their workplace. So we can say that jobs create and define the spaces of the city. They define the spaces of the city in terms of creative districts, the clusters of designers, producers, and services that come together around projects in apparel design, advertising, information, financial services, and cultural products. Another space that's less noted is the corporate creative divide, what I call the corporate creative divide, between the corporate centers of Midtown and this very dense and attractive set of creative districts in lower Manhattan. This includes the infamous internet-based firms, but also boutique advertising firms that have been drawn to lower Manhattan because of the diversity of its population and the creative atmosphere, and also a new apparel, what I'd call a parallel fashion industry that's been organized by immigrant entrepreneurs in lower Manhattan. And finally, the public and quasi-public spaces that serve in lieu of the office or factory. The city also builds jobs. And as I said, as a world capital and creative engine, New York builds jobs, particularly those in tourism and retail, that are constructed around its generative, innovative role in the culture and in the market and in public life. These industries take advantage of New York's concentration of immigrants, both the highly skilled cosmopolites and the low-wage working poor. They all contribute to the city's international image and ethos. Until recently, the conceptions of work and space in New York have been about Manhattan, and I think that this conference is beginning to express this broader understanding of what's going on in the city and in the region, particularly now in the last 5 years. The stories about what's going on in New York have been about Manhattan as the focal point for the region and what Robert Stern called the nation's downtown. More and more policy discussion is about development in what have been called the outer boroughs and the region. As it has already been mentioned, jobs are moving outward in the region. The job growth has, we see patterns of employment emerging as jobs that were once concentrated in Manhattan deconcentrate to the outer boroughs. Although Staten Island, Queens, the Bronx, and Brooklyn still play second fiddle when it comes to job-creating engines, and that drive New York and force this intensive competition at the center, this pattern is changing as economic activities and jobs spread throughout the region. Now, if we turn to the concrete, the local, we can point to three ongoing conflicts about over work and space that capture dynamics shaping New York as a city, as a place to work and as a place to live. I would like to note, however, and this is in some way reflecting on Gerald Frug's comments, that the origin of these comments, these conflicts that I'm going to describe, just as they're almost emblematic, lies only marginally in the city or in the region. They are a product of corporate governance and power dynamics that are really shaped outside the region and the city. And I think it's very important to understand that much of what causes problems, contentious conflicts, and difficulties between spatial uses of space and priorities is a consequence of corporate governance rules and political dynamics that are constructed at the state and national level. And the city is in some ways in a position only to respond to those kinds of dynamics. Now, as an example, and I'll give three brief examples, there's a continuing battle over the Fashion District where land speculation pressures threaten the critical nexus between the creative work of designers and the manufacturers who supply them just in time for the accelerated fashion cycles. A second example is Lower Manhattan, the place, as I mentioned, where New York maintains its critical innovative edge. Again, there is a conflict between the speculative drive in terms of real estate prices and its transformative power. And the way that they intersect and conflict with the space and infrastructural needs of project-based work. Finally, there's the intense conflict over work and housing in multiple locations in Brooklyn, including the areas around the Brooklyn Academy of Music and in Greenpoint, Williamsburg. In this case, pioneers in the gentrification process connected to design are in a heated battle with those seeking middle-class housing proximate to their work in the city, and those who feel that their once peripheral neighborhoods, reeling under the pressures of gentrification, job decentralization, and new investments. So there's both a positive and a negative dynamic at work here. So what do the spatial patterns we see characterizing New York tell us? I follow Peter Marcuse here in suggesting that they are patterns of clustering, fragmentation, and an intense center with multiple peripheries. Now, as has already been mentioned, and I was quite surprised by this, New York has never lacked for regional visions. This is almost an irony. There's a tradition of looking at New York and the region as a whole through the RPA, and most recently, what I think of as a brilliant effort by the Revisioning New York group following 9/11. These multidisciplinary efforts rethink New York space economy and try to develop strategies to make the city work for all who work and live here. These rationalizing efforts are valuable in addressing the need to construct stronger connections within the five boroughs to the region and to the world. Now, the combination here argues for pulling the fragments together and moderating the intense speculation at the center. This is happening inadvertently because jobs are decentralizing, but again, it could be thought about in a more coherent way, trying to realize some of the plans that have been laid for many years to connect these diverse communities in the region. At the same time, and I think this is something that's been neglected in the regional plans, we also need to focus on the local scale, on the industrial districts and urban villages that are central to New York's economic strength as an innovative, generative center. So the future of New York, I would say, resides in interconnectedness in both rational regional plans to enhance the connectedness of the city and the region, but also in the celebration and strengthening of the urban villages and districts that support innovation and creativity. Thank you.